I think the individual clubs are doing a good job as far as continuing to perfect and really keep everyone's feet to the fire as far as doing the right thing. This is a season about trust, not just what you do in the building and on the football field, but in particular what you're doing away from the football field.
That's the voice of new Monday Night Football analyst Louis Riddick, sharing his take on the added burden NFL teams face as they prepare for this strange season. Today, with the pandemic upsetting all the normal routines, freshly minted NFL analyst Mina Kimes tells us what football teams need to succeed in these beyond unique circumstances. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, August 17th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Mina, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird is this conversation for you right now?
Weird because you're interviewing me, or weird because we're talking about a sports season that is apparently going to happen with no change?
Mina Kimes is about to relaunch ESPN's daily football TV show, NFL Live. And she hosts The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny Podcast. And as she and the producers here never let me forget, she's the founding host of this show. I've changed a lot about the place. I don't know if you've noticed that, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah, you photoshopped your own face onto my family photos, that sort of thing.
I mean, Sun Min and I are really getting along great.
You should have her come on.
And look, it is incredibly strange right now because every other sport, as you alluded to, is in flux or canceled or bubbled or in this stage of just wild existential dread, but the NFL, your NFL, is marching towards a normal season, but it's not exactly normal. So what would you typically be covering or doing right now, and how different are things for you right now?
Well, I want to clarify, the existential dread has not escaped those of us in and around the NFL as well, but it is different. So normally, in mid-August, we would be coming off of the first week of the preseason. People like me would be probably a little bit too excited about guys and how they've performed against third-string defenses. I'd be watching every minute because, you know, I have a sickness. I was trying to think this time last year who were some of the players we were overexcited about. I think everybody was prepared to overdraft Jacoby Myers, the Patriots wide receiver, based on how he played in the preseason.
Lead over the middle to Myers.
Jacoby Myers galloping along the sideline.
Pass is caught. That's Jacoby Myers. The young...
And there's always these legendary preseason performances. Who could forget Blake Bortles just shredding the NFL in 2014 after he was drafted?
Bortles looks deep. Finds a man open. And he is complete.
Right now, he is lighting up this defensive backfield.
Blake Bortles throws it deep, open is Lee, and that'll be a touchdown, Jacksonville Jaguars.
But, you know, the preseason does matter. Now, in recent years, we've seen coaches start to sit more of their starters in preseason. Sean McVay, the coach of the Rams, whose preseason I did color commentary for last year, notoriously sits all of his starters, not just in, you know, week four, but in weeks 1, 2, 3, and 4. And that's something we've seen more and more around the NFL. And I think just as importantly, a lot of teams around the NFL have joint practices this time of year, normally, right? Like the Rams and the Chargers, for example. And something you hear a lot from teams is those joint practices are actually more important than preseason games. So those haven't happened as well. They also agreed to start camp this year with 80 players on the roster. It used to be a big final cut from 90 to 53. And what you're starting to see across the league is just teams ramping up padded practices, and there'll be intra-squad scrimmages, but that is all we are going to get before the season starts.
So the preseason is canceled. I just want to know, when you're at home doing all of your meticulous research, are you still wearing those polo shirts that you wore while calling Rams preseason games last year that made you look like a Radio Shack employee?
They're very comfortable. And Radio Shack employees don't wear blue. Every time I wear a polo shirt, you guys hit me with this. And that's not how they dress.
Spoken like a true Radio Shack employee.
I hate this.
But are some teams more affected by the lack of preseason than others when you sort of survey the league?
Absolutely. And not just preseason, sort of the lack of a normal offseason has a disproportionate effect on some NFL teams. First and foremost, I would say teams with rookies at key positions, like Cincinnati with their new quarterback, Joe Burrow.
With the first pick in the 2020 draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrow, quarterback, LSU.
I thought Joe Burrow was a no-brainer pick for them at number one. He is a phenomenal talent, just came off the best season by a college quarterback in the history of the sport.
Now Burrow going to launch downfield for Chase. Who's got it? Touchdown, LSU. Launching for the end zone. Jump ball. Touchdown, Terrence Marshall.
And he's very pro-ready. Played in a pro-style system at LSU. But playing in a pro-style system in college is very different from coming into the NFL. I mean, Joe Burrow at LSU, you know, had an incredible edge at play caller. His skill players were typically the best on the field. He played behind an excellent offensive line. Now in Cincinnati, he comes into a team that was, you know, objectively bad last year, which is how they got him, with a new-ish head coach in Zach Taylor, an offensive line that ranked 31st in ESPN's pass block win rate metric last year. I would also say teams with new coaches like Cleveland, which wiped the slate clean, brought in young Kevin Stefanski as their head coach and Alex Van Pelt as their offensive coordinator. And then finally, Pablo, teams with uncertainty at quarterback. The best example in my mind being Chicago, which traded for Nick Foles to compete with Mitch Trubisky. Normally, we'd have a preseason to, you know, watch this competition play out in real time, but that's not happening.
So is it possible then that the teams we see in September, that they're going to look really different from the teams we end up seeing in December?
Absolutely. And that's often the case with the NFL, right? Just because of attrition, injuries, defenses taking time to gel. But this year, it's going to be more dramatic than ever before. For example, a team that I think is very good is Tampa Bay. And Brady, Tom Brady, you've got the most accomplished quarterback in the history of the league. And Bruce Arians, you've got a veteran play caller, but they have very different styles of football. Brady is a master of diagnosing defenses pre-snap and getting the ball out quickly. Bruce Arians' offenses typically have these longer developing plays that stretch the field vertically. We don't know how those two styles are going to merge, and it's possible they won't reach their final form until late in the year.
So you're telling me that we're going to get to watch Tom Brady evolve like a Pokemon as this season proceeds.
Tampa.
Mina, on the flip side, who are the quote-unquote winners amidst all of this chaos?
I think teams with a lot of continuity are undoubtedly the ones who will certainly look the best early on. For example, New Orleans brought back the same coaches. Obviously, Drew Brees, they've got a quarterback who's basically mind-melded with Sean Payton, their head coach at this point. They've got a ton of continuity on the offensive line, a deep roster. They added a few veteran pieces. Emmanuel Sanders, wide receiver, Malcolm Jenkins comes back to play safety. But that's not an overhaul. That's just sort of tinkering along the margins, which is why I think along with San Francisco, they're widely seen as a favorite in the NFC. In the AFC, a team I think that also will benefit from continuity is Baltimore. Baltimore was so good last year on both sides of the ball that there was a thought that their coordinators, Don Wink Martindale on defense and Greg Roman on offense, would get head coaching looks and might leave, but that didn't happen. And that's huge for this team to have both of your excellent coordinators stay in place. Now, this is an offense that was historically great running the football.
Mark Ingram bulldozing his way. Ingram in midfield and dragged down from behind.
Jackson takes it himself. Look at him dart back and forth. Oh, he broke his ankles. Now he's got an entourage and he's got a touchdown.
But even if they take steps back running the ball, which is likely again because what they did last year was so unprecedented, Lamar Jackson has gotten better as a passer.
Jackson over the middle, caught by Hollywood Brown. See you later, Hollywood, to the house. Jackson looking deep for Hollywood Brown again. He's got it. Touchdown.
He finished third in passer rating last year, which does not account for rushing, unlike QBR. It's not a stat I like, but it's a good way to just look at how he performed throwing the ball. And you got to think he's going to get even better, especially with a healthy Hollywood Brown.
After the break, let's talk about the teams you expect to dominate this season and also the ones that might be a little less expected.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Mina, you mentioned that the Ravens are going to benefit from continuity. So does that mean that you expect them to get over this playoff hump they've been dealing with? Because they lost in the wild card game 2 years ago, and then they got run over in the divisional round last year by the Titans.
Yes, literally run over. Derrick Henry basically trucked the entire team.
Henry, oh, the stiff arm twice on Thomas, and he's out of bounds. Derrick Henry has got major speed for a big man, and he takes it inside the 10.
And Pablo, they made some moves this offseason to address that, drafting a linebacker and Patrick Queen first, and on defense, adding Calais Campbell, who's one of the best run defenders in football. They traded practically nothing for him. So that should shore up a run defense that actually was not great all season. It just didn't really become a huge problem until the playoffs. But unfortunately for the Ravens, who I think are a very good football team, there might be an even better football team standing in their way. And that is the team I think is the best in the NFL, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mahomes keeps it. He dives right side. Touchdown!
The Kansas City Chiefs are champions of Super Bowl 54.
We talked about continuity and how it matters more than ever this year. Well, Kansas City paid big time for that continuity, giving Patrick Mahomes a bazillion dollars. That's a technical term there. Chris Jones, they managed to keep on the defensive line, who was a huge difference maker in the Super Bowl. And then most recently paying up for Travis Kelce, one of the two best tight ends in football. What that shows you is that they are all in for the season. And I don't blame them. You've got the best quarterback in the NFL and you've landed on a couple of stars around him. Why not pay up for the short term? Long term, it could be challenging for them, given what they've done to their cap, but right now they're the team to beat.
So Kansas City looks like they are the next dynasty in the NFL. But the previous one, New England, is currently undergoing a radical transformation. Everyone, Mina, freaked out after the Cam Newton signing. But what actually do we wind up with weeks and weeks later?
So I should start by saying, it's not entirely clear that Cam Newton is the starting quarterback. You know, I talked about how there's no preseason and some quarterback competitions that we would normally get to watch play out. We won't. New England is a good example of that. Now, based on what we know about him, if he's healthy, one would think he is the starter there. But even so, while he brings a lot of excitement back to that New England offense, this is a team that perhaps has been hit harder by COVID and player opt-outs than any team in the NFL. On offense, they lost their right tackle, Marcus Cannon, and then on defense, Dante Hightower, the linebacker, the quarterback of the defense, and Patrick Chung, starting safety for many years, both opted out. Many other players did as well. This is a Bill Belichick coach team. You can never count it out. But I think because of those losses, even with the potential upside you get from Cam Newton, they're kind of in the second tier in the AFC behind the Chiefs and the Ravens. I would also put Buffalo there, Indianapolis, Tennessee, and Pittsburgh. And then the whole AFC West is wide open behind Kansas City as well.
So let's switch conferences now, because your beloved Seattle Seahawks made a huge splash signing by trading for Jamal Adams, the safety. Did that transaction vault them into legitimate Super Bowl contention?
I think it did, but before you scream Homer, wherever you are listening to this, I should note, I still think there are a few teams in the NFC that are a cut above. The aforementioned Saints, with all their continuity. San Francisco, which brings back a elite defense that was actually quite banged up last year and replaced their star left tackle with another star left tackle in Trent Williams. And then Dallas, which had their own splash signing in Everson Griffin, the pass rusher. They had the second most efficient offense in football last year, then got the steal of the draft in CeeDee Lamb. So all they need is for the defense to be above average, I think, to put them in contention. Now, all that said, Seattle definitely did get a lot better. The Adams trade, which was very expensive, did give them one of the best secondaries in football. And they've got a quarterback in Russell Wilson, who might be, I personally think, is the best quarterback in the conference. But they still got a ton of turnover on that offensive line and a giant hole in their pass rush. Now, Jadeveon Clowney is still out there as a free agent, but at the moment, they're not a perfect team.
You mentioned Russell Wilson. I unfortunately don't recognize that name anymore. I choose to know him as Mr. Unlimited.
I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, you got to be unlimited. You know, you got to have a thought process of being unlimited.
But we all know the NFL's real Mr. Unlimited is Jerry Jones. Because Jerry Jones, Mina, has already declared that they're going to have fans, like human fans, in their giant spaceship stadium in Texas.
Well, I'll start by saying, if Jerry Jones is Mr. Unlimited, that has not translated into playoff success for him. and I kind of think this statement, and look, Jerry Jones says a lot of things, who knows what will happen with the fans. It is a reflection of the fact that I'm sure Jerry knows he's got a really good football team, right? And you know, it would kill him if people couldn't see that football team play extremely well in person and he couldn't lord over Jerry World the way he normally does. But ultimately, it might not be up to him.
So Dallas is one of those teams that I think are close to consensus favorites in terms of, oh, that they're going to be good this year. But give me some dark horses so I can sound really smart when I pass off all of your wisdom and study as my own work later.
I'll give you a couple dark horses, but I think instead of sounding smart, you're going to get a lot of groans when you repeat these. The first, Cleveland. I know, I'll regret it. I always regret it. I regret it last
Why
year.
Why are you doing this to yourself?
The next one is even worse. But look, on paper, Cleveland has a very talented roster on both sides of the football. Okay, plus they have gotten an upgrade at coaching, bringing in Kevin Stefanski based on success he had in Minnesota with that offense, which finished 10th last year versus Cleveland's 21st. You should see a benefit there. And they've improved in the trenches. On offense, they added the rookie Jedrick Wills out of Alabama. On the right side, Jack Conklin, one of the better run-blocking right tackles in football. That should help. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, they should get a full season out of Myles Garrett, who many people believed was a defensive player of the year candidate last year before he got suspended. Okay, now here's the other one, and fans of this team are going to be so angry when I mention them because they've really beaten all the hope, right, out of their system. And
what are you about to do here?
I kind of like Detroit.
Oh.
So they were a lot better last year than their record showed. They went 3-8-1 in one-score games, which is usually a good predictive metric, right, for a team that is likely to bounce back. They also lost their starting quarterback, Matt Stafford, last year to injury. Through the first 9 weeks of the season, they had the fourth most efficient passing attack in the NFL. He was playing tremendous football, airing it out. And if he can channel that gunslinger mentality again this year, I really think they can compete in a wide open NFC North.
So, Mina, I am just legitimately concerned that you have cursed the Lions in the same way that you cursed your old employer, Radio Shack.
I've never worked at Radio Shack, Pablo, and you know that.
Let's just hope that the same curse doesn't also apply to your next employer, NFL Live, which launches when? Next week?
Next week, and I can promise you I will not be wearing a polo shirt.
But you will have the same motto as you did at Radio Shack. You've got questions. we've got answers.
Why do you know that?
Mina, thank you for joining your old podcast. We do still miss you.
Thanks, Pablo. You're doing a great job.
Coming up, baseball players are learning the hard way that these pandemic protocols are significantly more serious than they thought.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. When Indians pitcher Zach Plesac took to Instagram last week after the team had suspended him and Mike Clevinger for breaking pandemic protocol during that Chicago road trip, the 25-year-old started his video by hitting a familiar note.
The media really is terrible, man. The media is terrible, and they do some evil things to create stories and to make things sound better, makes things sound worse. And truthfully, I'm disgusted the way the media has handled this whole situation surrounding our team.
In general, I must admit, this is not a bad strategy. When it comes to the pandemic and pretty much anything else, there is no easier political opponent than the media. Like umpires, we media types are most famous for messing up, sometimes catastrophically, instead of mostly getting the stuff correct. Plesac's problem, though, is that this rhetoric did not work on his actual opponents in this situation, because his actual opponents happened to be his teammates. ESPN's Jeff Passan reports that multiple players, including all-star Francisco Lindor, scolded both Plesac and Clevinger in a testy meeting last Friday. Lefty Oliver Perez even vowed to opt out of the season if the two pitchers remained on Cleveland's active roster. Because the problem, to them, was not the media. It was Plesac who broke curfew and got caught at the hotel. And it was Clevinger who lied about being with Plesac and then boarded the team plane, further endangering pitcher Carlos Carrasco, who was treated for leukemia last year. It all felt like a kind of betrayal. Which is why Plesac and Clevinger have now been banished from Cleveland for 10 days, told to stay away from a big league team that could use two genuinely talented pitchers, but currently doesn't want to. And that's a useful reminder for all of us. If we do outlast this virus, it won't be because the media or scientists or politicians shame us into modifying our behavior. It'll be because the people in our real lives, our teammates, our family, take this pandemic seriously. It'll be because the people we care about are willing to tell us what we don't want to hear. That the real problem is us. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.